Brandon Hardesty is the songwriter, frontman of Bumpin' Uglies, a band. They got put in the reggae genre, but they're much more than that, I feel. But incredible songwriter, incredible musician, great, great band, Bumpin' Uglies. Really enjoy their music. Brandon talks about his songwriting process, who his favorite Beatle is. I was very shocked at that, by the way. And we talk about the reason why he writes some. He's a new father, how music, songwriting has changed for him. They're just about to go on tour. Bumpin' Uglies are in the fall, and I hope to see them live this fall. But a great interview with Brandon Hardesty of the Bumpin' Uglies. I know you're going to enjoy it. Thanks for listening. Hi, I'm Joey Pins. People ask me, how did I lose 130 pounds? The quick answer is always discipline. I started my business, wasn't paying attention to my health, was eating too much, drinking too much sweets. My daughter was born. Next thing I know, I'm pre-diabetic, I have hypertension. I knew something had to change. Discipline. I, like many of you, have faced many challenges in your career, in your family, in your life, in your faith. How did you attack them? How did you approach them? How did you solve them, hopefully? It all had to have some degree of discipline. I'm also asked, how did you found and start a tech business that lasted over 25 years? Discipline. I was committed to it, enjoyed technology, didn't enjoy some aspects of it, but knew it was necessary. Discipline. Our podcast mission, how do we use discipline to better ourselves and society? Join me, please, as I talk to interesting people and discuss how they use discipline in their family, in their passion, in their careers, and how it helped them. Our podcast vision, growth through learning from others. Joey Pins Discipline Conversations. It'll be light and serious. Join us, please. Thank you for consideration. It's a great pleasure to meet you, man. Really, really great pleasure. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
So I just want to start off. Is it a good time right now to be an artist?
Not really, no.
Explain.
I mean, COVID is forcing us to like constantly reimagine how we make a living, you know, like the rules of engagement are changing from week to week. It's honestly kind of terrifying.
Interesting. And yeah, because streaming, I mean, this kind of, it's not good for artists as well.
You know, streaming is actually all right. Like I don't have any other frame of reference because I came of age essentially in the streaming era. So I never made any substantial money from like quote unquote record sales. It's always been streaming, and it's a big part of our business is streaming, and it's been consistent. It makes enough. I feel like we get a fair shake off of it. Could we make more? Sure. But I mean, it's all right. The thing for me is like a big part of our business model has always been touring, and that's where COVID has complicated everything, is because it's just, everything's just weird and uncertain.
Yeah. And especially what's happening now, you know, I'm fortunate. I get to talk to some artists, and the last number I heard was like 0.003 cents per stream. And there's a movement to make it to a full penny, which I guess iTunes and some of them are a bit more receptive to. But even Spotify has areas now where you can donate directly and the artist gets it directly and Spotify doesn't take anything. I mean, these kind of initiatives should be, they look positive anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I'm into it. You know, more money for artists, you know, it makes it easier. You don't have to depend on touring so much. I'm not really sure how the economics of that would work. Like you say, like a penny per stream. I don't know where that money would come from. Cause then at that point I feel like that's putting extra, it's going to raise the raise the cost that people have to pay for Spotify monthly, right? I would imagine, or Apple Music monthly. There's been a few different pieces of legislation that have passed in regards to getting more money for people. And I just don't follow it close enough to like really speak with an educated opinion on it. But I definitely support more money for artists.
Absolutely.
For sure. I don't know how to make it
well,
work.
Well, you know, Apple's a $1 trillion company. Certainly they can, you know, Spotify is not quite there yet, but I think they can, I don't know, between you and I and whoever else is listening, this, certainly they can give a little bit more of the pie to the artist. Just my humble opinion, but
for sure. I mean, I think at the end of the day, the bulk of the money that's coming in from those subscriptions should be going back to the artist. Like, I understand that they have to reinvest into maintaining the service and growing it and this, that, and the other thing. But I mean, the bulk of it needs to go to the creators. Once again, like, I don't know the breakdown of how that works. So I can't really comment on what it looks like right now, but I mean, I think it's fair to say that the bulk of it should go to the creators, because without the creators, you don't have it.
I agree. A great quote I heard: record companies will come and go, but the artists will always be there. You know, Prince had a great quote. Somebody asked him, you know, how's the record business? And his quick response was, I'm not in the record business. I'm in the music business.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the way I've always thought about it. Like, I just try not to stress it. I mean, I like playing music live, like, and I like touring. I enjoy it. It's, you know, there's the creative aspect of everything, which is like the studio game and recording music. And then there's the human interaction of it, which is going out and playing that music for people. And, you know, we've been very fortunate. We're able to make a pretty solid living doing that, you know? So I guess it's just, it's never been that much of a source of frustration for me, the streaming side of it. That said, yeah, it's weird right now with COVID.
Yeah, it's cool. And how about, you're not very political, but you know, there's civil unrest and there's these kinds of things, and you have I noticed some of the lines in your lyric where you kind of touch it and back off a little bit. But is it a great time to make your voice known with those conditions happening?
I don't think it's ever a good time for that, honestly. Like, I mean, I'm very opinionated on politics. I made a conscious decision right after Trump got elected that I didn't want to be like Zach DeLaRocca. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to be that guy that was on stage like shouting at people about my politics, because I think it's self-indulgent. I don't think anyone has ever changed their mind about politics because some jackass with a microphone was yelling at them. I don't think that all it does is like create further divide, and like it's fodder for your echo chamber. You know, like the people who agree with you are just going to be like, fuck yeah, that's what I think. And then the people who don't agree with you are going to be turned off and they're not going to listen to you anymore. So I make it a point of not forcing my politics on people, like at least through like conversation and through like the shows. But that said, like, my art is my art, and if I have an opinion on something, I'm going to write about it. Like, I'm pretty opinionated on healthcare, and you know, I believe in socialized healthcare. So you know, that's where our song Underinsured came about. But it's like, I'm not gonna, you know, we play the song, I'm not gonna go on a rant and tell people why I think socialized medicine is a basic human right. I'm just gonna play the song, and they can listen to the lyrics, and they can make the opinion for themselves. You know what I mean? I just think that's it's a much more healthy means of having that conversation as opposed to going on rants.
Yeah, I agree sense. Completely. Why divide your audience? Why be more polarizing? You know, I'm not going to make my decision on this until I hear what Kim Kardashian says about it. You know,
exactly. Like, I dropped out of college. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not, you shouldn't be listening to me about anything important. Like, I have opinions, but I'm not a scholar, you know?
But, you're an incredible songwriter. I really, really enjoy your music and your lyrics. Now, when you write, do you have something that comes first, the music or the words?
No, not really. Like, I'm always kind of writing. I have a lot of ideas when I'm driving, or just like kind of like when I get into that, you know, like when you kind of get into a routine of like you're doing something, so you're thinking about the task at hand, and then there's stuff going on in the back of your mind. I'll get like one liners and stuff like that. Then I'll kind of like write those down and just record them in my notes on my iPhone. And then, I'll flesh those out as I try to treat songwriting as a job, in the sense, like when I have the time for it, I'm disciplined for it. You know, like I wake up in the morning and I make a pot of coffee and I come down and I make myself write, regardless of whether or not I have something to write about. It's just the exercise of writing. And, just to create something, you know, and sometimes what I'll write isn't any good. It's not something I want to use. But then a lot of times it's just a skill set like anything else. Like you develop it, you like build the muscles. So I make myself do it, even if I'm not inspired. But then there's times when I'm like really feeling something that I need to get out. And I use my songwriting as a means of journaling or getting out those emotions and thoughts. And that's like much easier to do. And I'll get those lyrics out. But that, you know, that's like on the lyric side. And then on the other side, the guitar stuff, it's just like kind of the same thing. Like I'll pick up the guitar and I'll come up with a riff, or I'll come up with whatever, a progression, a melody, and I record it. And, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, I sit down and I try to flesh out the entire idea. And then other times it's just like, well, I have this riff that I came up with a while ago, and then I had these lyrics that I came up with a while ago. And it's like kind of will fit together like that.
Wow. So going back, I have two quick questions on that. One is, when you receive that inspiration, when you're not staring at the blank page, but you're not forcing yourself to write, you're doing something else, do you immediately have to kind of run to the guitar and kind of, like you say, flesh it out? Or do you kind of record it on your phone and let it sit?
I just record it on my phone and let it sit usually. Yeah.
And that moment of inspiration, like, what triggers that? I'm fascinated by this process from great artists.
It's different every time. From a lyrical perspective, I'm like really into just the human condition, I guess. And like, I kind of come from the school of like Johnny Cash and John Prine, where I just want to talk about kind of like everyman emotions, you know, things that are kind of timeless, and they're not specific to like a social class or a race or a gender or whatever, just emotion, basic human emotion that you can kind of feel with whatever. So like, when I think of something like lyrically, like because it kind of, for me, it all starts with lyrics. But like, if I think of something that's like striking enough that I think it's going to resonate with like the majority of people who are going to hear it, like it's going to make them feel something, then to me, that's inspiring. That's exciting. And I want to explore that.
That's fascinating. So when you're writing, you're thinking, how will the audience receive this?
Yeah. And I kind of use myself as kind of a springboard for that, I guess, just because I'm a very emotional person. I'm very, I think I'm very empathetic, and, you know, I just feel things very deeply. So like if something hits me in a certain kind of way, and I think it's general enough where it can, make other people, I think it's going to have that effect on other people. That's, to me, it's worth fleshing out and exploring.
Very cool. Have you ever written something that you feel is in someone else's voice?
Yeah, I do that a lot, actually. If I'm like struggling with something, or I've done it as I've gotten older, because like when I was younger, I was like way weirder about it. I thought it was like disingenuous, but like it almost keeps it interesting, and it allows me to like talk about things that I don't necessarily, I haven't lived, but I think I still understand from like, you know, I love stories. Like I love a good story. I love like a good movie. I love a good book. Anything that's like kind of like captivating. So to me, like that's like what I like, one of the things I try to do is like, I try to immerse people in my songs and tell stories. So like a lot of that is like using other people's voice. So it's like, if I have an, once again, it's all about the idea. Like if I have an idea that I think is worth exploring like that, then I'll definitely do it. Like so our song Suburbia is like all about, like opioid addiction, and it's not a real story, but it's a story. It's about like a fake person that I kind of created based off a bunch of kids I grew up with who had like similar parts of that, you know, I took like different examples from different lives to create this story.
I mean, at that point you're a fiction writer at that point. I mean, you're an author.
Yeah, but it's at the same thing. It's telling the story, and I like the idea is to make the audience feel this thing and realize what's happening. And I think one of the things that inspired me to write that song was the like the show The Wire. I don't know if you ever watched that, but just, you know, like being from Maryland, I've always like loved that show, and it's a great thing, and it really paints the idea of what opioids have done to done to their community. And I just thought that was like a story worth telling. Like, as far as I'd known, there wasn't really a lot of people talking about like what prescription pills had done to, you know, middle-class white kids. And it is, it's an epidemic of my generation. So I just thought it would be a cool story to tell and like kind of do it in that same, like, you know, they do it over 5 seasons. I tried to do it over 3 verses, but,
and there's plenty of room to expand there, I'm sure. There's a story that I always hear. I don't know if it's true, but when Bob Dylan wrote All Along the Watchtower, like Jimi Hendrix performed it live within a week or so. And when Bob Dylan saw and heard it, he said, that song was never mine. It's always been his, and I'll never do it again. So there you have an example of doing something in somebody's voice, and they want to be separated from it. Have you ever heard the story before? What do you think of that?
I never heard that, but it's really cool to me that like it takes me to Hurt by Johnny, mm-hmm. like, or by Trent Reznor, who wrote it, but then Johnny Cash played it. And, you know, Trent kind of said the same thing. He's like, you know, that's Johnny's song now.
Oh, geez. That just gave me chills. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, that I know I've heard Reznor do it. And then when Johnny Cash does it, it is a moving song. I want to talk about some of your songs. You covered 2 Beatles songs that I never hear anybody cover. And they're both Paul songs. Oh, Darling and Rocky Raccoon, you kind of did acoustically. But I enjoyed your take on both of those. Are you more of a Paul than a John guy?
Definitely. And I'm more of a George guy than a Paul guy.
Interesting.
Yeah, George is my favorite Beatle, and then I'd say Paul's my second favorite Beatle.
I mean,
I think John Lennon's pretentious as shit, honestly. But he's, you know, he's like, I mean, he was brilliant. He's just a little too much of a hippie for me, I think.
Definitely, certainly, yeah. And I think him and Paul made the great. But All Things Must Pass, George's album, right afterwards, right after they broke up, which many of those songs were done during the White Album, but Paul and John didn't want to release it, is a masterpiece of music.
Yeah.
I mean, George Harrison is so underrated. I wonder if he would have been that great of a songwriter if he didn't have those two around. What do you think? Hard to say.
I don't know. I think they probably all learned from each other. I think it's like, I think the Beatles kind of became the Paul and John show, you know? And Paul's great. Like, Paul and John are great. I just think George had like just really cool sensibilities. I think like for me, like when I think of the Beatles, like Paul was like very professional and driven and just methodical with his songwriting. And then John Lennon was very idealistic and like whimsical and like just more of the weird artist type. And then George was just like cool and wrote just like these cool, like emotional songs, you know, like Something. Like Something is like one of the best songs in the Beatles catalog, I think. And like Here Comes the Sun. Like, I don't know. Like, to me, it's like George is kind of like the best parts of both Paul and John, which is why I don't know. He's my fan. And then Ringo, I can't listen to anything Ringo wrote.
Did he actually write anything? I didn't know he did.
Oh, dude, he wrote Octopus's Garden and Yellow Submarine, which are like the two cringiest Beatles
songs. See, I thought they wrote them and they had him sing it. I didn't know he wrote them. It's interesting. I mean, Something, when he goes into the you're asking me, will my love grow, I mean, that part of that song just is incredibly sweeping and moving. And you know, his other Tax Man, and yeah, it's a, even on the White Album, like kind of Saffron Trouble.
I didn't know he did Taxman, but that's one of my favorite Beatles songs too. That's cool. Yeah.
Well, he was very upset because they were taking all their money. The English government was taking all their money. So you're a father now, and your kids are young. And has there been a change at all? When I Die, a great song that you have, and it's very perspective and kind of looks back. Is your music writing changing a bit with fatherhood?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I'm definitely getting more, I feel like I've always been sentimental, but like the things I'm sentimental towards is that, you know, it's, everything's become, your world just becomes so much bigger with kids and like less about you. It's crazy. I've definitely, it's affected my songwriting in the sense where it's, I'm just feeling all these like new things, which in turn, like it'll lead me to write about, I'm still feeling all the old things and like writing about that as well. But it's been cool kind of coming into this new chapter of my own life and having that to write about.
Yeah. It's, and just, wait, Brandon, until they get to my age, my youngest just went off to Maryland, actually, University of Maryland. And, right. Derp. And, so I'm empty nest. So that's a very different feeling. I know you're quite a ways away from that, but, then is another very interesting chapter where your kids don't need you, you know, right around. And, I'm not an artist like yourself, but it definitely takes, a shift in life. So the highest downloaded song, Island Time, is, I would guess, to be your most popular. It's a recent song, 2019, if I'm not mistaken. And, are you comfortable with the reggae genre?
I mean, I like it. It's not like, it's interesting because it's like, I kind of like stumbled into being into a reggae band. It's just like, some, like this is my first band I was ever in. And I started it when I was 22, 23, and I was just really into Sublime at the time. And so that's what we did. And then like, I just did it. Like, I've been doing it forever. And it's like, I love like reggae rock, but then I also love like folk music, and I love Americana, and I love like stoner metal, and I like just doing all these different things. But it's like the reggae rock thing is like what really kills it for us. So it's like, you know, if I put on like my like pragmatic business hat, you know, it's like, well, that's how I make my living, and it's, I like it, you know, I dig it, and I'm happy with it. It frustrates me sometimes that like some of the songs that are like really cool to me, they don't have like the same legs as the reggae stuff. But at the same time, I'm very proud of the reggae stuff. I just, I guess it's like grass is always greener kind of situation. You know, I'm just happy to be making a living with all this, you know, but I just don't like at the end of the day, like I don't want to, like, I don't think of us as a reggae band, you know, like I think of us as like a band that plays reggae music amongst like other things. And I just wish, I just kind of wish we had the same, we could get the same momentum and have the same success for the other stuff as we do the reggae stuff. But at the end of the day, I'm lucky to have any kind of success with anything. So I don't know if that answers your question.
It certainly does. And Sublime, you know, I just, it's such a tragedy there. What happened, and how did you get into them? I mean, they were huge in the 90s. How many albums? Two?
They put out like
three or four
yeah, really. Yeah. There's like 40 Ounces to Freedom, which is like it was kind of like a very lo-fi, like self-produced record. And then they have the self-titled record that they put out, like their major label release that like it actually came out. Like Brad was already dead when that record dropped. And then like posthumously, I don't know if I'm saying that word right, but like after he died. Yeah. They dropped like another couple records, some like real DIY release stuff, like very lo-fi, self-produced once again. And I think it's like three or four. I mean, I got into Sublime, like I didn't even know who it was, but I just remember hearing the songs on the radio when I was a kid because it was everywhere. They had like four hit singles off that record. And I didn't really get into them until I was like 17 or 18 and I started kind of partying and stuff. And I was playing guitar and I was like, man, this is really cool shit.
I could play the guitar like a motherfucking riot. Yeah.
It's funny because that it's like he has that line and then it's just like super lame, like acoustic guitar solo that's like not ripping at all. But like it's also like one of the most iconic solos of the 90s. Is. You know, if you actually like. If you like listen to like interviews about that and stuff, like I don't even think he played that guitar solo. Like I think he said that line and then that guitar solo got recorded by someone else. Cause the whole like that whole recording process was just a fucking train wreck, man. Like they were super fucked up the whole time. Like Brad had to he ended up getting sent home to Colorado to go to rehab because he was just like super strung out on heroin. And a lot of that record was done by their producer. Just like cutting up jam sessions while they're in the studio.
It's fascinating. Yeah, so much talent. Another one of my favorites of your song is All in Stride. You have this line in here that made me, I was walking and I stopped when I walked. And you said, the boy who wrote the lyrics is not the man singing the song. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
Thank you.
Yeah, it stopped me in my tracks, literally stopped me. Tell me about that.
I just think it was kind of just like I was just trying to paint a picture of like how long I've been doing this and like really how long you've done it. You know, like you're constantly changing. Like we as people are constantly changing. And it's like, I'm singing songs that I wrote when I was 23 and I'm 35, you know what I mean? Like I am not the same person anymore. And it's, you sing these songs cause they're the songs, you know, that's the way people wants to hear. But it's like, singing about these emotions that I felt a million years ago that I don't think like that anymore. And it's just kind of funny. I guess it was just a funny thought to me. And it was a funny way to say it. Clever.
Very
way to
clever.
Say it.
You know, I saw an interview recently with Green Day with Billy Joe there, Armstrong. And, you know, he wrote those songs from 35 years ago in the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a completely different person. So, When you re-sing these in concert, and do you have a different interpretation of them now? Do they reflect differently to you?
Not really. I don't really think about it like when I'm singing them. I just try to worried about playing them well, you know. And I try to like put emotion behind it when it's appropriate, and I try to just like. To me, like every song has like a basic theme about it, and I try not to think about the particulars of it. But I guess I kind of try to get into that headspace of just the overarching emotion when I sing them. You know, to me, All in Stride is kind of it's just defiance.
It is defiance, yeah.
You know, so I kind of try to put that hat on when I'm singing it. And it's like, you know, there's always something to be defiant about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There always is. Have you ever been disappointed at someone's interpretation of one of your songs?
Not really. I'm sure I'm not to say that I wouldn't be if someone just totally missed the point on it or like. But it's cool to me, honestly, for the most part, that it like songs that I wrote about like a very personal thing. People like take them and they kind of apply them for their own struggles or their own celebrations or their own whatever, you know. Like I think that's kind of one of the cooler parts about music. It would be kind of a bummer to me if like someone heard one of my songs, I was like, man, that inspired me to blow up an abortion clinic or some shit. Like I would not be excited about that, but that, as far as I know, that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that would be something. So are you of the mindset is that once you release it, I mean, do you ever talk about what your intention of the song was, or do you ever add more to it, or you just kind of leave it up to the consumer?
I'm an open book, man. If people ask me questions, I'll give them an answer. I try not to, I try to be very on the nose with my writing. Like I don't, like I said, I want to like tell a story and make people feel things, but I'm not trying to make them like figure out what I'm thinking. You know what I mean? I want to kind of, I try to spell it out. Not to say that I've never done that, but like for the most part, like as a rule of thumb. So if, you know, people ask me like what I was talking about in a song, I just tell them. I'm not trying to keep it vague, or I'm not trying to overthink it. I just, it's just, for me, it's just writing, you know. I just like writing. And
yeah, well, you're really good at it. Yeah. You know, because we go back, we talked about the Beatles, go back to the White Album there where Rocky Raccoon was, Helter Skelter, right? I mean, it was, they meant it as a ride on the, you know, on an affair. And then you have somebody like Manson who obviously turned it around and did all his misinterpretations. There's nothing really the artist can do at that point other than deny it. But like you said, people are crazy. People are good. I don't think art's going to change their mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Definitely. It's fascinating. We talked about how you kind of got put into the reggae, but then a song like Florida Showers to me is almost a country song. It's almost it's kind of a free flowing, very upbeat, you know, kind of country song. And, it's an excellent song. And so is this one of the ones where you say, where you kind of mentioned before, where you don't think it falls into that genre?
I mean, sonically, it's definitely a reggae song. You know what I mean? Like because of how Johnny produced it. I would call that definitely a reggae song. To me, it's like the reggae thing is like, it's a sonic texture more than anything. Like I don't know where what did you mean
maybe
by country
lyrics.
Song? Like, where
maybe
you
the lyrics more there.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, it's, but I think that's kind of a universal thing at the same time. You know, the just like it's a standard breakup song. Like there's a lot of that in country, but I mean, there's a lot of heartbreak in reggae too.
Can you describe what it means to be sonically reggae? I don't know what you mean.
Well, like sonically, is a word that people use a lot. Like sonics is like what you think of, like when you're producing music, like how does something hit, you know, like what, like what's the production techniques, you know? So like to me, Florida Showers, you know, it has like the skanks, like in reggae or when you're like, that upbeat thing. So that's like a characteristic of reggae. There's a lot of dub in Florida Showers, you know, like the delay and the reverb thing, that's a big characteristic of reggae as well. I can't think of what the drums are doing off the top of my head. I don't think it's a one drop, but it's, I don't know. But yeah, like sonic, like the sonic identity of a song is like musically what's going on in it. So it's like musically, it's very much a reggae song.
Interesting. Has Bob Marley been an influence?
No, not really. Honestly, like I dig Bob Marley. I'm not like a huge Bob Marley fan, but like he's definitely got songs that I dig. But for me, like Sublime was always the school of thought of what I was going for with reggae, which is funny because they're not even really reggae. Like their whole idea, it was like hip hop beats. And that's funny because like I've realized that as I've dove deeper into music and learn more about this, but the thing that really gets me going about it is the hip hop beats. Like I love that shit, like the boom bap 90s hip hop feel to those drums, and then the reggae guitar over top of it, the dubbing techniques. Brad's voice was just incredible, and then like the punk rock sensibilities is cool as shit, but really at its core the thing that got me the most was the hip hop.
Interesting. You know, you think about Bob Marley. We have a man, a genius from a small island nation of Jamaica, who invented a whole new genre of music. That man in that island created a whole genre. It's quite incredible to me that it happened there and it happened from that man. It's awe-inspiring to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, if Bob Marley was still alive, I think he'd be one of the biggest artists in the world, you know?
Yeah. We can only wonder. We can only wonder. How much of the way you write, writing specifically, is art versus science?
Man, that's a good question. I feel like I'm very methodical with my writing. I don't really think of myself as an artist, man. Like I think I'm good at this thing that I've done for a long time for no other reason than I'm not like super smart, but I'm a smart dude. And I've been doing this shit for 14, 15 years, you know, like I think if I'd been doing anything for 14 or 15 years that I cared about that I was working at, I'd be pretty good at it. I think I have a natural inclination for words because of how I was brought up and from being into reading and English and whatnot. But I've always been a sponge of like trying to learn how to do stuff, how to do this thing, you know, and I figure out what works for me and then I do it, you know? And then I get like I said, I get ideas. My whole thought process with like writing lyrics is like, and this comes from the world of hip hop, but like, I love like one-liners, like really clever one-liners. Like the boy who wrote the lyrics ain't the man singing the song. Like when I came up with that line, I was like, that's a fucking good line, you know? And like the way I structure it is like, put those one-liners that like really hit at the end of the verse, and then the rest of it is all just like rhyme schemes and you know, rhythm structures like for the cadence and whatnot, and just making sure it flows and whatnot. So to me, it's very scientific, or you know, like scientific isn't necessarily the word I would use, but it's just for the sake of what we're talking about, it's scientific. It's just methodical. Like I figured out a way of writing that works for me. And I try to do that. And then where like the artistic side of it comes in is like, I'll be inspired by stuff that I hear that I like, that makes me feel something. And then I'm like, whoa, that's cool. I'm going to try and incorporate that into what I do. And then I'll try and do different things based off other things that I've heard that I like. And I just try to kind of work them into my thing. But I'd say it's mostly following a recipe or a formula that I've kind of developed over my 14 years of doing this.
Yeah, because when I hear you say kind of sonically, and you talked about, you know, hip hop beats, it does, formulaic sounds a bit too mechanical, but you kind of force yourself at times to write. You know, this is very, like you say, methodical and disciplined. I talk a lot about discipline. And then you kind of introduce the art the other way. You get inspired by it. You see other things, you get inspired, and then that kind of makes the complete song. But it seems to me you're more scientific than perhaps you know, or perhaps I would have imagined you were.
Yeah, I think it just comes from I'm a control freak, you know. Like I really like to be in control of my situation, and I just don't like the idea of like sitting around and waiting for inspiration or whatever. Like, and I don't like the idea of not being in control of my own destiny. I think that I'm good at what I do because I've developed it. And I think that if I force myself to do it enough, you know, just because my mind, like literally, like I've spent my entire adult life developing my mind to think about like songs and lyrics. So as long as I have the discipline to make my mind work on that, you know, I will come out with stuff that's good. It's just a matter of, you know, not everything's going to be good, but I have a good head for it, you know, like assessing my own work and figuring out whether it's good. It's just a matter of making myself do it. And I really think that most creatives are like that. It's just a matter of whether or not they treat it as such. Like, I think a lot of people get caught up with the romance and the artistry of being a quote unquote artist or a creative. But I think discipline is important, you know, for making it happen. Not to say that there's nothing to be said for being particularly inspired. But I mean, I think for me personally, if I just sat around and waited to be inspired to write, I would write 4 songs a year, 5 songs a year, maybe, you know.
And how about your live shows? What's the pie split between artistry and science there when you're performing live?
When we're doing it live, I just try to make it a fun show, like, for people. I try to make it an enjoyable experience. I've always been, like, even when I was in school, I was always trying to make people laugh in class. You know, like, I was not very good at school, but I was always a clown, like clowning. And I kind of try to do the same thing at the live show. I just want to make it like a fun party kind of thing. I found like something that's very easy is kind of being self-deprecating, people like that, you know. I don't know if that, like, how that factors into artistry versus science, but I kind of just follow my gut in the live situation. You know, we make a set list and I'll call out audibles as they're appropriate, but other than that, I just follow my gut.
There you go. There's where the artistry comes in. What should people that go to your show, how should they behave and what should they expect?
Just come in ready for a good time and a positive attitude and be good to the other people you see there. You can expect a good live show, like a high intensity live show. And we're just a live band, you know, we don't use backing tracks. We're out there just playing music and having a good time and engaging with the audience and just trying to just rock, melt people's fucking faces, really. Make them dance.
Yeah, right? I mean, we have a mutual friend, of course, that made the introduction. And, you know, she's been talking about you and your band for a long time. I got into you. I haven't seen you live yet. I've seen the videos live, but I look forward to doing it. You're going on tour this fall, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, it's great to hear. Well, Brandon, you're an absolute delight, man. I really, really appreciate your time today. So how can people support? How can they get in touch with the Bumpin' Uglies?
I mean, the best way to support is, you know, buy some merch. We have a merch site, bumpinstore.com, where we have a bunch of stuff for sale. Coming to a show, buying tickets, is a great way. And you can check us out. We have a really cool community on Facebook called Uglies Nation. Just following that, you can check out our website, bumpinuglymusic.com. Just checking us out, buying some merch and telling a friend about us. And dragging that friend
to a
show. That's
right. Yeah, get him there. And all shows are still on this fall. There's no cancel. We're still going to have shows in the fall as of right now.
As for the time being, that's the plan.
Brandon, thanks so much for your time, man. I really, really appreciate this. Great to talk to you. Great to understand you a little bit more. I wish you continued success, and maybe one day we'll, you know, get to shake hands and talk face to face.
Hell yeah, I'd like that.
Be well. I really appreciate it.